So hello everybody, welcome to this edition of Positively Autistic Jeanette's Autism Show. I'm your host, Jeanette Perkis. This show is a wonderful program where I talk to people in the autism community and who have some involvement with autism and are doing good things to talk about their work and their lives and all the great stuff they do. So I've had all sorts of guests on the program. Tonight we've got one of my regular guests, who's one of the good folks from Positively Autistic. That's Sarah Scrimshaw. But before I introduce Sarah, I better introduce myself in case you have not come across me before in your travels. My name's Jeanette. I'm an author. I'm on the autism spectrum myself. I'm a public speaker. I'm an advocate. I do all sorts of wonderful things. I'm on reference groups and advisory committees and everything you could imagine, and it's wonderful. And I have a black cat called Mr. Kitty, who's very beautiful, and he might join in the program. If you're really lucky, he might come and say meow. But today I have a friend who also has a black cat, and that is Sarah Scrimshaw from Positively Autistic. So welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much, Jeanette, for allowing us to be back on your show. It's fantastic to hear from you.
Oh, it's great to have you here. Always like to have you on the show, and Joe as well. I understand you went to a conference lately. Could you tell the listeners a bit about that, please?
Yeah, I was approached by a professional contact from Laos Autism Support Group. They are a group of young people who have been having a group now for a long time. They approached me at a Ludbrook car boot sale and asked me, because I'm an officially trained autism advocate, they asked me if I would attend one of their autism conferences at Louth Town Hall, which was on Thursday the 20th of October 2016 this month. And unfortunately, because they don't get any government funding themselves, they have to raise all their own funds through car boots and autism conferences. I've always wanted to attend an autism conference. So when I was asked to attend this one, I was like, wow, yes, please. So I went along and it was an absolutely brilliant conference. It talked about what the law is around autism and what needs to happen to make real change happen, not just for children on the autistic spectrum, but also for adults on the autistic spectrum. And we learned a lot of powerful information that we brought back from the conference. It talked about the SEN support process for children on the autistic spectrum, and it talked about healthcare plans and what needs to be put in place for them when they are going through issues with one-to-one special needs support in the school if they can't cope in a big school classroom. We also learnt all about the Children's and Families Learning Disability Act 2014 and how that needs to become more effective in the law around autism and what needs to happen to make sure we are all working together to providing change, not just for children with autism, but for also for adults with autism. So it was well worth £10.
Oh, that's great. And did you get to talk to many interesting people there?
Yeah, I got to talk to the team, and they are a group of a family group. They set the organisation up for families who have children on the autistic spectrum, and they're all volunteers, and they all came together because they wanted to make a difference, not just for children with autism, but for adults on the autistic spectrum. And so, I got to meet two professionals there, and they were saying that if adults on the autistic spectrum get failed by the NHS system, they can go down what's called the legal route of taking it to court if they feel that they're not getting the appropriate professional support from NHS services. So we learned quite a lot. There was a lot of angry parents saying that the same is happening over there in Laos here in the UK, that many children are being failed on the autistic spectrum and that they've got no support, there's nothing in place, and unless something changes, they feel like they're just going back to square one.
I think it's really important for people on the spectrum and parents and carers and family to actually know what their rights are in relation to autism services and health services. I think I know from my own experience in mental health services, a lot of people don't realise they've got cause for complaint and there's actually avenues for complaint. So knowing your rights, responsibilities and avenues for complaint, if you have one, I would suggest everyone does that, because, you know, if you are, most of the time services will be supportive and do what they're meant to, but if something goes wrong, it is important to hold those services to account to make sure that that doesn't happen to someone else in the future. So it's really important to get across, whatever country you're in, get across what your rights and responsibilities are in relation to health and disability services. So it sounds like a really good thing to talk about.
Myself and my NHS colleague at Queen Street are working on some fantastic, brand new, first of its kind autism projects here in the UK. And we came up with an idea that I came up with. We have many ideas that we've been playing around with. I went to a Loughborough car boot sale and I found a beautiful photo album. And it's something we wanted to use as an idea to build a ASC hands logo professional photo album of all the professional things that we've done over this good last few 49 months. And we said, right, we'll start putting in professional photos of everything we've done so far. And when we arrange our autism events here in the UK, we'll take along all our new ideas that we're working on at present and take them along to the autism event and show people what we've done so far, what are the ideas that we're working on, and show people the ideas we are working on and show them, you know, all the hard work that is coming from these ideas, and try and get people interested in supporting a worthwhile project that I'm funding out of my own pocket.
Yeah, that sounds like really good work you're doing. There's a lot of people doing good things, and I think a lot of them sort of almost go unnoticed, but I think it's really important for people to be aware of the work that's happening around advocacy and support and all of those things. Now, you are one of the key people at Positively Autistic, who's an organisation I've been involved with this program for a few years, and I got to know it through you. I think you got in contact with me and said, would you like to be on my show? And I said, oh, yes, please. And it sort of went from there, didn't it? Now we both have a show. I think I air mine a lot less frequently than I would like, because, two things. I'm very busy, and also the guests. I used to organize a guest every week, and then I thought, that's 52 people a year, that's a lot of guests. I don't know that I know that many autism world people who'd want to be on the program, so I have it a lot less frequently, but it is a good thing to do. And Positively Autistic are doing some wonderful stuff, and they have their very big social media and web presence, as well as the work you do. So could you talk about Positively Autistic and the kind of work that they are doing and promoting advocacy and acceptance and things?
Yeah, Positively Autistic Community Organisation, we are a group of volunteers. We're all about professionally supporting all those families and adults on the autistic spectrum who feel they are not getting the appropriate support through the NHS, and we are there for them no matter what the situation. And we're all about advocacy in how we continue to campaign for autism in the future and what needs to be happening to make real change happen. And I think it's about making sure that we continue to help not just families but adults on the autistic spectrum to have a voice on our Positively Autistic radio shows, so that it gives them the voice to their frustrations and voices on what they would like to see happen. So if there's anybody out there that would like to also professionally support us and help us to make real change happen and come up with any ideas that they think we haven't tried, please do let us know versus our Positively Autistic Community Organisation Facebook or our online radio shows.
And I will put the links to both those things on the promo page for this show. So if you're listening to the show and you want to get involved, just click on the link on Blog Talk Radio and there will be the links for the Positively Autistic website and Facebook page. And the Facebook page is excellent. I often pop in there and have a look, and there's a wide range of information and ideas being put up, which is really interesting. Occasionally I'll put up one of my blogs on there as well, but because I'm one of the admins, I can't really say it's my blog or everyone will get confused because it says it would say it's from Positively Autistic. So I have to be very creative and say, Jeanette Perkins made this lovely blog or something, and then I feel guilty because I think, but it's me, and yes, it's a weird life being me. So I've got here, I have to the listeners, I have dot points that guide my show, and I'm very excited to talk about something. And when I was writing these dot points, I thought, what's a neat little segue to talk about my new writing project? And there wasn't one, so sorry, Sarah, I'm just going to go ahead and do a little plug for my new books, my new collaborative books. I hope you don't mind, but they're very good, and you guys will get a copy when they come out. So resilience, which is another topic that's really important, and I don't mean, you know, sometimes parents will report that they or their child has been told by somebody in the education area, oh, your child won't be bullied if they get some resilience. Rest assured, neither of our books are anything to do with that. That is not resilience. That's dismissive victim blaming and is not cool. And actually, yes, someone would be less likely to be bullied if they got resilience overnight, but it's not very likely. And I always say it's about as likely as growing 6 inches taller overnight. Yes, you probably wouldn't get bullied, but hey, it's impossible. Resilience is something that needs to be grown and promoted and encouraged. It's not something that you can say, oh, I'm resilient. In fact, that comment is basically saying it's the victim's fault. So I don't like that. I always have to go up front with that when I talk about resilience and say it's definitely not what I'm talking about. So what happened was I gave a presentation in a conference, and my co-author Emma Goodall, who's awesome, she also was one of my co-authors with me on the Guide to Good Mental Health on the Autism Spectrum. And Emma saw my talk on resilience and got inspired and said, let's write a book on resilience. So we put together this very beautiful proposal, sent it to the publisher, and a week and a half after we sent it, we got sent a contract. So we were quite happy about that. So now we're on this lovely project making two books for parents about promoting resilience in children and teens and young adults on the spectrum. So it's they're going to be pretty good. I'm book plugging already, and they probably won't be out until 2018. So if you really want them, you'll have to be patient. But I imagine it will be well worth the wait, and I'm very excited about this. I like writing on these topics that actually are very practical and actually help people navigate life better. I'm a very practical person when it comes to my writing. I like giving people strategies. Life can be really difficult, and the way you address that is not by magically making the difficulties go away, because it doesn't usually work like that. It's by building strategies so you can move through the difficulties. So I think our mental health book was about that, my employment book was about that, and I think these books are going to be focused on that too. So I'm very, very excited. So I just had to announce that. Anyway, thank you. I'll get back to Sarah now. I've got my next top point is maybe a discussion on the value of cats. What do you reckon, Sarah?
I think you're quite right, Jeanette. Cats are very resilient as well, because they can read our body language when we're not well, when they need love and affection and TLC, and they're very happy animals. So Lulu has a mad half hour before she goes to bed where she'll have a crazy moment and chase around the floor like she's on some sort of medicine that's quite worn off. She's doing so well. I mean, I rescued her and her brother Louis from a mental health facility out in North Ferriby here in the UK in 2010, 2 days before I sadly lost my ginger Tom type from kidney failure at 16. And they were born very, very prematurely. The parents, the mum, she was a first time round mum who didn't really know what raising two babies was all about. She gave them the first vital milk, which is colostrum, which has antibodies in it, which protects their immune systems. And after that, she sadly rejected them. So they've come on a long, long journey of utter proud and resilient fight for life. And, you know, they're both now 5 year old. They'll be six next year. So cats are very, very resilient.
I'm just going to get mine and give him a cuddle. Not that the listeners could see that, but I need a cuddle with a kitty. So my fellow, oh, now my chair's backwards steering me. Poor Jeanette doesn't know what's going on. Here we go. So for the listeners who can't see this, I'm giving my enormous black 7 kilo cat a big cuddle. He loves cuddles. Even if he doesn't feel like a cuddle, he'll put up with one usually. And then he's like really beautiful. He was a rescue cat and I was a rescue human. Oh, off you go then, Fur. It's okay. Go have some cat food. But Mr. Kippy came to me in 2013, January 2013, and he was just under a year old. And he was a stray. He got picked up wandering around farmland north of Canberra where I live. It looks like he had an owner at least for some part of his life, but he was very thin and very cranky and didn't like people and didn't like anything. And then my friend, the cat rescue lady, came. I wanted something to help me out because my mental health was really bad and I've always loved cats, but I was so anxious about getting one because I didn't know if I'd be okay with the responsibility. And I thought, am I meant to have one where I live? I mean, I own the place, but even so, it's an apartment, so it's a body corporate. And everyone said to me, absolutely everyone I knew just about that loved cats said, Jeanette, you need a cat. And I kept making excuses. And then one day I was at home from work because I was really unwell, and I went upstairs to, you know, check the mail or something, and there was this little tabby cat sitting on the wall, and I scratched him behind the ears, and he's purr, purr, purr. I came downstairs and I thought, hang on, when I was patting that cat, I felt really good. I did not feel stressed or depressed or anything. I felt good. So I contacted my friend who was the cat rescue lady and said, bring me a cat. So she did. She brought me 4 carriers full of kittens. So I had all these kittens running around my house, which was absolutely adorable. I should have filmed it and put it on YouTube. But I didn't really want any of the kittens. None of them did it for me. And then the last carrier, there was a cat by himself because he didn't like other cats. And he was this big, grumpy black cat. And I took him out of the carrier and I just instinctively gave him a cuddle, held him really close. And he started purring. And at that moment, we both knew, I think, that we belonged to each other. We completely imprinted on one another. It was like amazing. And he's just the best cat in the world. He's always been very affectionate. He sleeps on the bed every night right up next to me. He loves me. I mean, when I have movie night, and I don't understand what eyes look like, what they're saying, you know, even cat's eyes, definitely people's, but my friends at movie night say that they can tell from the way he looks at me that he really, really, really loves me. And it's so nice. And when I take him to boarding, because I travel a lot for, you know, for conferences and things, and I take him to cat boarding, and when I go to pick him up, he can hear me talking outside the door. And as soon as I get in there, he's standing up in the cat, like it's a big cage. He's standing up there on his back legs, holding up, meow! You know, he knows exactly who I am. And even if he's been really cranky the whole time he's been there and been a bit mean to the staff, they're always amazed because when I get him and give him a cuddle, there's no aggression. He's just really loving. And I say, oh, he is a nice cat after all. He's a bit of a problem child with other people, actually. He's got some poor behaviours. When he's stressed, he gets aggressive. So he is a bit of a difficult cat. But I don't care. He's lovely. He's mine. So do you have any other things you want to mention? It's a very quick interview today. I think we're going for about less than 30 minutes, unless you've got some exciting, scintillating thing, or I mean, it'd be cool. Otherwise, if you don't, then that's all good as well. But it's nice talking to you because you've been away sick as well and with the flu, and it's nice to talk to you.
It is, Jeanette, and I'm glad to be back because it was awfully lonely being sick on my own and nobody to talk to. So it's so good to be back. But I brought one of Temple Grandin's other books, Thinking in Pictures, and I haven't read it as yet, as I'm reading a book on autism heroes.
Yeah.
Which I'll put up on my Facebook when I've finished reading it and take a picture of it.
Yeah.
But as we say, you know, we're both autism advocates, and I think we really do such an amazing job out there in the autism community, helping so many that need us. And you know, I hope that you'll come over to the UK one day, whereas we can all meet up and you know, you come and talk to professionals about what it's like for those on the autistic spectrum, what the challenges are, what the issues are, and how it needs to change, because if we don't, nothing will change.
I would love to. My issue is Mr. Kitty. I don't know that I can board him for 3 or 4 weeks without him being a very unhappy cat. But once I've worked out the logistics for that, maybe when he gets a bit older, a bit more mellow, I will definitely be coming to the UK. That's the only thing holding me back, is just the practicalities of no one will look after Mr. Kitty at their house because he frets for me and meows all night, which keeps everyone awake. And the cat boarding place, if he's there for a week, it's bad enough. So I will need to, it is definitely in my mind to get some things happening so I can manage that, because, yes, I would love to come and see you all. I've got lots of friends and colleagues in the UK, and I would love to see all of you. So it's definitely on my to-do list. It's just the fix the cat boarding issue is the first thing I need to do, but I've definitely got that in mind.
Because, you know, we both do such an amazing job, and, you know, the challenges of autism. And, again, if those professionals that aren't trained upon autism, then they need to be trained upon autism. We've tried to get Harrison House NHS Service here in the UK interested in taking some autism awareness training, but unfortunately they just keep going up, and it's not an answer, and nobody seems to be saying, well, yes, we need this training so that we know how to professionally support an autistic individual out there in the autism community. There's just, you know, such ignorance about it, and I think that we need to start enforcing the training, or otherwise things won't change.
Definitely. I think it's important to get the message out there. And, I mean, I've been doing this since 2005, and I have noticed quite significant changes, and I think the audience is a lot bigger for ideas around autism, but it certainly isn't as big as it should be. I think I think there is definitely a lot more that needs to be done. Things are moving in the right direction generally. I wrote a blog post earlier in the week about that, reflections on my 22 years since I got diagnosed, of how attitudes and perspectives around autism have changed. And one of the things I noted was more people are willing to try and understand about neurodiversity and all that kind of thing, but there is still patches. I mean, you've still got things like abusive treatments, so-called, for kids, and charlatans selling camel milk and all this rubbish that's really harmful, anti-vaxxers peddling crap, you know, all of that stuff. You've got that happening at the same time that you've got the work that we're doing, and you've got Steve Silberman's Neurotribes being an international bestseller. You know, it's really weird that there is, on one level, a big audience for the right ideas, and on the other, a lot of very unhelpful thinking and dismissiveness and stuff. It's an interesting time to be living in.
I'd like to start working with our local PCSOs. I know an officer here in the UK, Mark Ireland. He's a new PCSO for our area here in the UK. And I was saying to him, I would so much like to train up the PCSOs. There's so much need autism awareness training, because unless they have that training, how will they know to engage? How will they know how to engage? Mm-hmm. And so I gave them one of my leaflet questionnaires about a couple of weeks ago. And I'm hoping if all goes well, that they'll show some initiative in wanting free training from me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really would like to work with PCSO. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm hoping that they'll use that leaflet mm-hmm. to do so.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. And producing resources like that is really useful. I've got a friend who's she's a Joey Scout leader with the young kids and scouts, and she's done these autism flyers about what it is like to be an autistic person and stuff for showing to the scout leaders, which is a really good thing to do. And it's not an area that most people would think, oh, we should get to this as an audience. But I bet a bunch of those scout leaders have got kids with a diagnosis. And a bunch of kids who are not diagnosed yet. And so them having those skills is really important. So that kind of thing, putting things out into the world, and especially into places where, you know, information on autism doesn't often go, but is actually quite useful. So I think, yeah, and the thing about this stuff is there's so many of us doing it now. This is amazing. When my first book came out in 2006, there were a few very well-known people. There was Temple, Donna Williams, Wen Lawson. But most... there really weren't that many people do, and in America there was some people like Jim Sinclair and stuff, but it wasn't as much of a sort of, I know it's quite ubiquitous now, so lots and lots and lots of us, and a lot of autistic people become advocates, and a lot of autistic people who are parents become advocates, and this is really good stuff because it's much broader and there are so many more opinions and perspectives and views being shared just because there's more people sharing them. That's great.
Yeah, and I think the more professional we are, Jeanette, the more fantastic things we can achieve together as a team. And, you know, we both work extremely hard. We look at ideas that haven't been used and how we can use new ideas to start bringing autism back into reality and start, you know, really producing those changes slowly. And I think that's what we need to do at the moment. We need to keep bringing autism ideas into play and saying, hey, right, what are the people's mm-hmm. view, their suggestions, let's hear their suggestions mm-hmm. so that we can use those ideas and say, hey, right, okay, let's try this idea.
Yeah.
And me and my mum was talking last Wednesday night at the auction, and we were saying that if I held a car boot sale and tried mm-hmm. to raise some money for the Professional mm-hmm. Autism Project so mm-hmm. that, you know, it can continue to achieve what it wants to achieve and, you know, use that money to provide the resources I need.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I mean, some things that are going on here, we've got a number of organisations that have started up, like actual companies that are run pretty much predominantly by autistic people, and it's just a really good thing. And I think that's a great model too, that, you know, you have people on the spectrum actually making the decisions around, you know, around services that affect autistic people. I think that's great. Actually, the more I see of lived experience, if you like, experts talking about their expertise in various areas, and you think, actually, why have we not been listening to people like this the whole time? I mean, the answers come from the people with the lived experience because they know what it's like. You know, we know what the experiences are. We don't need to go and see a lecture with someone explaining what being autistic is like and what might help. We can tell you that from straight up ourselves, you know, just from our knowledge and our experience. And I think it amazes me that it's taken so long for so many organisations and, you know, conferences and stuff to realise that actually the lived experience speakers at the conference are not the colour and light. They're actually the main game, you know. Actually, the people talking about what happened in their life and what worked and what didn't, that's the key to providing services. And thankfully it's more understood now, but I think that's really important, that having autistic people leading the decision-making about autism is a very good idea.
Exactly, and that's what I'd like to see happen here. The officially trained autism advocates like me start leading the way for people with autism and get more people on board in this. And so the more people we get on board, the more powerful things we can do. And as an officially trained autism advocate, I will continue to make sure that I am doing that and will continue to do that. It's just a shame that NHS professionals just continue to ignore the fact, ignore the problem. And the more they ignore the problem, the more the problem gets bigger, because if these people aren't getting support out in the autism community and they're not getting it out there in the community, then they're being left with nothing. They're just being left to go into crisis. And I know an organisation called Victim Support here in Grimsby. They have asked me to do a talk on autism to their staff, but I don't know when they'll want me as yet or if it will ever happen. But we'll certainly try to make sure that we make that happen. So there's a lot of work we need to do to make sure that we continue to keep kicking autism into touch and make sure that we continue to get it out there. No matter, you know, if we're doing it on a voluntary basis, we need to keep getting that message out there and start kicking things into touch and getting more on board with us to make sure that we are the voice for those with autism.
Oh, that's good. Well, I've really enjoyed speaking with you once again. This one I will air in a couple of weeks, because the one I'm recording tomorrow, I'll be talking about an event that I'm speaking at for her on Saturday coming up. So I'll need to do that as soon as possible. But I'll pop this one on in mid-November. And thank you so much for being on the show, Sarah. It's always nice to have you. And thank you for listening to all the listeners. And it's goodbye from Sarah.
Goodbye.
And me. Goodbye. And Mr. Kitty. Meow.